How many times have you heard a movie is all right? It's average. It's just okay. If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh, I'm Davey Barris and he's Darren Cross. And on this show, we'll break down and review these movies and decide once and for all if these meh movies are good or bad and whether or not you should watch them. Because on this show, there are no meh movies. Now, for a movie to qualify as meh, it must be between 40 and 60 on the tomato meter or 4 and 6 on IMDb. And Darren, it feels good to be back for season 3 talking movies again. I'm sure you all thought during the pandemic that we'd be sitting around doing nothing, watching movies, and of course we'd be podcasting. But it turns out me and Darren were pretty busy during the global pandemic. But we finally have some time to sit down and talk movies again. So we're back for season 3. It's a special episode today. We are starting on Valentine's Day with what other movie could we choose? The movie Valentine's Day, which scores an 18% on Rotten Tomatoes. But don't worry, it's a 5.7 on IMDb, which qualifies it as a meh movie. Now, spoiler warning, of course, spoiler warning. Darren, the movie Valentine's Day, tell them what it's about.
Valentine's Day is an ensemble cast of several celebrity actresses and actors who have their own little Valentine's Day stories that kind of slowly mesh together. I guess you could think Love Actually, but replace Christmas with Valentine's Day. That would be the best way to describe it, I think.
And set it in Los Angeles, of course. All right, Darren, you remember how this is done. The first question we ask on the No Meh Movies podcast is, did the movie do what it was supposed to do? So, Darren, did this, I guess, rom-com do what it was supposed to do?
Not that much for me. It was a little, I felt feels a few times here and there. But for the most part, I thought most of the storylines were a little corny. And then same goes on the comedy end. So there were some laughs, there were some chuckles, some things that that hit my funny bone. But overall, I thought it was they went for a lot of cheap laughs, and I wasn't that into it. So rom, so-so, com, so-so.
You know what? I'm going to say that the movie did do what it was supposed to do for me, because when I'm thinking about this, when I'm thinking about a movie like Valentine's Day, you're probably going to this movie as a date, or you're renting this movie as a date, right? I doubt anyone's just sitting around watching this by themselves unless they're truly a romantic at heart or they really love the actors and actresses in this movie. So it's probably a date night movie. And I got to say, me and my wife sat and watched it together, and we both chuckled a couple of times. We ended up watching this on a Sunday morning, but I think if we were to put this on a date night, I don't think it would feel like a waste of time. I think we would both walk away. If we had gone and seen this on Valentine's Day in 2010, I think we would have walked out of that theater feeling like, we had a pretty successful Valentine's Day, right? We saw a rom-com. We probably ate some chocolate together. So yeah, so I'm going to say the movie did what it was supposed to do for me. All right, Darren, let's talk about this cast, because the big thing about this cast and the next question we ask on the No Meh Movies podcast is, did the actors bring it? And my God, is this a huge cast. And we're going to name our top performer here. But just so you know who's in this movie, I'm going to run it real fast. This is the speed round here. I'm going to see if I can get all these names in. We've got, in alphabetical order, Jessica Alba, Kathy Bates, Jessica Biel, Bradley Cooper, Eric Dane, Patrick Dempsey, Hector Elizondo, Jamie Foxx, Jennifer Garner, Topher Grace, Anne Hathaway, Carter Jenkins, Ashton Kutcher, Queen Latifah, Taylor Lautner, George Lopez, Shirley MacLaine, Emma Roberts, Julia Roberts, Bryce Robinson, and Taylor Swift. So, Darren.
So many people.
Huge, huge ensemble cast. And the reason why it's called, you know, like considered Love Actually LA. Who is your top performer out of all those names to choose from?
You know, for me, it was Ashton Kutcher. I I really was kind of sold on his. He was a downplayed Ashton Kutcher, right? You didn't get your that 70s show Ashton Kutcher, right? He was a more, I guess, regular guy, you could say. He owns a floral shop. It's kind of a, you get the sense that it's a little bit blue collar, his job. And yeah, I thought his story and the way he approached it was enjoyable and most believable and realistic. And I really thought the way he reacted to the things that happened to him and how the movie played out. I thought he did a good job. If I had to pick one of these many, many people, I think it would be him.
Yeah, I surprisingly, I'm not agreeing with you that he was my top performer, but I will say, as far as his performance, I agree that a downplayed kind of everyman Ashton Kutcher was actually a pretty good actor. Like, it was a believable performance. Too many times in his career, he's probably asked to bring back that 70s show Ashton Kutcher, the over the top, zany Ashton Kutcher, where it seems like he's trying too hard. You're right. In this role, I believed him as a romantic that owned a flower shop. So I can see where you're coming from with that. No coincidence that I picked the actress that was set opposite him for most of this movie. I picked Jennifer Garner as my top performer. She plays Julie Fitzpatrick, who is a elementary school teacher who is dating Patrick Dempsey, the doctor. Her student is one of the characters. Bryce Robinson is one of the young kids who's in love. And so there's a lot of things that kind of circle around her character. I guess you would kind of call them the leads of the movie. I mean, if you had to really pick what two characters this thing centers around the most. But
yeah, did she work at the shop, at the flower shop too, or did she just stop by to say hello?
She just stopped by to say hello.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
In the morning. I know it's hard to keep track, especially in that opening.
There's
a
lot going on.
Yeah, between Beale and Alba and Garner, and there's a lot of like brunettes running around to keep track of. But yeah, I feel like her story arc had like the most to it. And I think she actually, if that was just clipped out as a movie on its own, I would believe that story. I thought her acting was pretty convincing. The scenes where she goes to, where he tries to stop her at the airport and she, you know, isn't ready to take that leap or believe that this doctor is two-timing her. The scenes at that, where she goes to the hospital to find out, was a pretty emotional scene. So yeah, and then she has fun when she shows up with her girlfriends at the We Hate Valentine's Day party at the end. Yeah, she seems to be having a lot of fun with the heartbroken role. So I like the arc that Jennifer Garner takes on this. And I love the scene where she gets the baseball bat. So Jessica Biel throws a We Hate Valentine's Day party and has a giant heart pinata and brings a baseball bat to a restaurant. And she gives the bat to Jennifer Garner, who swings the bat like a pro and just wails on that pinata. And I really, really enjoy that. The way she swings that bat around, it reminded me of like, oh yeah, she was like Alias. She was in an action TV show. Like, I'm almost surprised Jennifer Garner doesn't get more action, more physical roles to do. I could see Jessica Biel and I can see Jessica Biel and Jennifer Garner teaming up on like a ladies kick butt kind of movie.
Yeah. Yeah. She can be a badass if she needs to be a badass.
All right, Darren. Yeah. Like we said, if we talked about every actor and actress in this movie, we would be here for 4 hours. So that takes us into our next category, successes and failures. Where did this movie succeed? Where did this movie fail? And because of the format of this movie, I thought we would approach this in a little bit different way than if you've listened to us in the past seasons. It's not going to be like this going forward. But for this movie, there are clearly 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think about 7 storylines, you could say, that interweave. So we're going to hit these storylines and we're going to tell you if this storyline is a success or if this storyline is a failure. Maybe we'll see what the final tally is at the end of this. So in no particular order, the first storyline I have is what I'm going to call the phone sex / forgot Valentine's Day storyline. And this is the storyline between Anne Hathaway, who moonlights as a phone sex operator, and Topher Grace, who is her unknowing 2-week-old boyfriend. So, Darren, does this storyline, is this a success or fail for you?
This storyline was actually, I think, a success for me. I did not care for the whole, like, moonlighting phone sex thing. I thought it was, I think it was fine that it was a thing, but the way they dropped it in the movie, I thought was weird, where, like, would you really be, like, at your job doing the phone sex in the middle of the afternoon? I mean, I don't know. It's Valentine's Day. Maybe that's the excuse. But besides that, I thought the storyline was good. It was believable and pretty, without the hook of her moonlighting job. It was a pretty normal story, right? There was two people that work in the same place that clearly had, like, what started out as a one night stand or something along those lines, and realize that they like each other more than they thought they did. But there's this weird thing where Anne Hathaway, you know, being new to the relationship, doesn't really want to just be like, hey, by the way, I do this really weird sexual thing on the side. Hope that's okay.
And they're not normal phone sex calls.
No,
they're very kinky phone sex calls. They are fetish
phone calls. So yeah, I would give that storyline a success. What about you?
See, I was going to give that storyline a fail.
Okay.
I didn't believe that Topher Grace's character, Jason, would be that, like, upset about it once he found out. Like, I mean, it's LA. People do weird things for money in LA. Everybody's struggling for money in LA. It's the reason we live in Ohio. Like, yeah, I just don't see him. And then, like, his apology at the end. So he apologizes for basically getting turned off by finding out that she has this job. But it wasn't even he didn't really apologize for anything. It was a weak apology at best. And she's like, she takes him back without question. And yeah, it was just a bizarre, I mean, I get the message of that storyline. Like, you can't just love the good things about people. You have to love all of them. So I get that. But it works a little better in other storylines than it does in this storyline for me. So I had this storyline as a fail. Plus, Topher Grace just gives off villain vibes.
You've been watching too much like Marvel and DC stuff.
Spider-Man 3, that Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3. Yeah, that's, he gave me these, like, creepy, maybe it's like in shape Topher Grace, because clearly he had done some push-ups, right? You know? He'd done a little, you know, CrossFit maybe before this movie, because he wasn't the scrawny Eric Foreman from that 70s show. But yeah, something about his look, the look he gives you just screams villain. Like, this guy's a bad guy.
See, I don't know. I just still think of him as Eric from that 70s show. So I don't know. Yeah, it's probably, I'm sure it's just has to do with the exposure that you've had, what movies you've seen him in. But yeah, but I don't know. He's still Eric Foreman, right? Is that right? Foreman?
Yeah, Eric Foreman. Yeah,
Eric Foreman, still Eric Foreman to me.
I believe in trivia we could get into. Yes, Ashton Kutcher and Topher Grace were both in that 70s show. If you look at the trivia page on IMDb, there's about like 15 entries on like this person was in this with this person, and this person was directed by this person in this. We're not going to go through all of them. All right. The next storyline I have, because I kind of have to put it on its own. It doesn't really fit anywhere else. It's kind of a tangent off of this, but the grandparents having the affair, Shirley MacLaine and Hector Elizondo, who, early trivia I'll give you, he is in, I believe, every one of director Gary Marshall's movies. He's like his good luck guy.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Christopher Nolan has oh my God. Oh, he plays Alfred in the Dark
Michael
Knight.
Caine.
Michael Caine. Thank you. Oh my God. I had that like 20 seconds ago and then it just left my mind. So what did you think of the grandparents' affair storyline?
I did not like it. I thought it was a fail because I didn't care. There wasn't enough before that to make me really care what the grandparents had going on. Right. Like they were sort of just, until that point, they were kind of just like, we're going to make sure it's clear that this child has supervision. that was their whole function. This kid is not by himself in this house. And then all of a sudden it got super serious, like really, really fast. And you're just like, whoa, okay, all right. I would feel bad for you, but I have no investment into you at all at this point.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be like the, because in every one of these love stories, there seems to be a wise sage character, which is basically what George Lopez kind of plays in this movie, giving advice to Ashton Kutcher. And I thought that was just going to be their role, that they were going to be the elderly couple in love that was going to offer words of wisdom to all these young lovers struggling. And then, yeah, they kind of, there's a hard, sharp left turn. And she had an affair with him back in the day. I forget, why was he out of the country or something? Anyways.
Building a apartment or something.
And yeah, so, and then she doesn't really apologize. Again, like she comes and finds him at the end of the movie and they realize that they love each other, but there's really no apology. So I got to fail on that one too for me. Like, you can't just show up. You actually have to form an apology.
Yeah, and he forgives her very quickly. He's like, yeah, I sat in the cemetery and watched this old movie that you were in, and I agree.
Which, trivia fact again, Shirley MacLaine was literally in that movie. That's an actual movie from the 50s that she was in.
And they say it in the movie.
Yeah.
She is literally in it.
It's like a Deadpool breaking the fourth wall moment.
Yeah.
All right, the high school kids having sex for the first time storyline. We have two couples in high school here. We got the one that doesn't get touched on much is Taylor Lautner and Taylor Swift, the popular kids, apparently. I don't know. And then we have, who are the other kids? Emma Roberts, who is, I believe, Julia Roberts' niece. And I don't even, who played the kid? I think Carter Jenkins played the other kid, the other high school kid. So what do you think of the high school storyline?
So we're talking about this as one storyline, right?
Sure. Because, yeah, it was all about sex, wanting to have sex for the first time. Should we have sex for the first time?
See, because for me, it was, I really wanted to like the Taylor Swift one, but it was like a little too goofy for the tone of the movie. Like, they really kind of went crazy with like how like slap happy, I almost want to say it was. Like, it got real goofy, which is fine depending on the tone of the movie. It was a different kind of humor than the rest of the movie was going for, which I didn't really think agreed with the movie. But the other story I actually kind of liked. I thought it was fairly genuine and believable. I mean, the whole like him being found naked by his girlfriend's mom in the house thing, that was a little goofy. But I thought it was...
Why doesn't she just leave the room? Why doesn't she
just give him a minute to
go
get
out
dressed
in the hallway?
Because it's funnier for him to run out in the street with a guitar naked. By the way, that was my first ode to Love Actually. That's number one. They'll be coming throughout the episode.
Nice.
If you remember in Love Actually, the guy that plays who's the rock and roll guy?
Oh yes, the old rock and roller. Yeah, yeah.
He declares if he gets chosen as the number one song of the Christmas season, then he will perform in the nude, which is what he does,
right?
With a guitar covering his private parts, just like in this movie.
Love is all around us.
You see what we did? We took the word love and replaced it with Christmas. In any case, so that's how I felt about the teenagers' stories. I actually was okay with the one with Emma Roberts, but the Taylor Swift one was a little too goofy.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I put it overall as a fail because it's, again, yeah, it just it is a different tone than everything else. I think you're right. And what was going on with Taylor Lautner and Taylor Swift? I have no idea. They were trying to be funny, and it just, the only thing funny about it is it sets the reporter, the guy who was like trying to be the cameraman, who was trying to be the reporter, it sets him up for a good line, something about like young love, dumb and ignorant or something like that, which that's it. Yeah. It is, young love is ignorant.
Yeah,
no idea what the real world is like, but
right
other than that one good line from the camera guy, I didn't need it in the movie at all. No, there's going to be a lot of things in this movie where it's over a 2 hour movie. It's 124 minutes. There probably is a decent, you know, there's probably a better, like 95 minute movie, 100 minute movie. There's probably a better 100 minute movie in here than the 124 minute movie we sat down and watched. All right, moving on, because we are taking a long time to get through these. The flower shop storyline. I'm gonna, all four of these people really intersected to me. So Ashton Kutcher and Jessica Alba. He proposes to Jessica Alba to start the movie, and then Jennifer Garner and Patrick Dempsey finding out that she's the woman on the side. But Jennifer Garner and Ashton Kutcher are best friends. This whole the flower shop storyline. George Lopez as the wise advice giving coworker. What do you got?
I would give this a success. This was probably the most, for me, the most enjoyable of the storylines in the movie. So the Jessica Alba thing, the way that they set her up to decide she did not want to marry Ashton Kutcher's and how she kind of just left, I don't know. I think they could have done it better, but it was fine. And then, yeah, the Anne Hathaway, Patrick Dempsey thing was good. It was funny at parts. It was entertaining. You mentioned a couple things about what Anne Hathaway did with her character when you were talking about your standout performance.
No, Jennifer Garner.
Or excuse me. Yeah.
It's so confusing.
Too many. There's so many, you know, yes. Jennifer Garner, not Anne Hathaway. Yeah. So yeah, I would give both of those storylines that kind of wrap around the flower store, a success in my book.
Yeah. You could have just had a movie with these four people, with these five people. If we throw George Lopez in there, like that's enough. Yeah. That's enough to tell a rom-com movie.
Yeah.
Have some more zany adventures, have some more, you could, you know, build up Jessica Alba leaving him a little more. You could build up Patrick Dempsey's betrayal a little more, like make him go on a couple of double dates. Like it's a movie. Yeah. It's an easy rom-com.
Yeah. It could still be Valentine's Day too.
Exactly. So I gave that one a success too, because it felt like the most complete story. All right. The QB who comes out of the closet as gay, the sports reporter, Jamie Foxx, who's following him, the QB was played by Eric Dane, and then the publicist of Eric Dane's character played by Jessica Biel, who ends up falling for the sports reporter. It's a whole thing. There's a whole thing going on here. We got Queen Latifah thrown in there too, for a little comedic relief. And so what
the agent, right? Queen Latifah is the agent.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you give the storyline?
I guess I could give it a success. I did not care for, I'm sorry, who's the actor that plays the football player?
Eric Dane.
Yeah, Eric Dane.
You didn't care for his abs?
His
chiseled jaw?
The man, he's a beautiful man. He's a creature of steel and beauty.
But he's like a handsome Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you go. His story was not great. And like, it was almost felt like the whole thing, the whole story was just pinned on the fact that it's like, oh, a gay professional football player is funny. That's kind of what it felt like. It was like, ha ha ha, you're in this manly sport and turns out you're gay. Ha ha. But I did like Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel kind of getting together. I thought Jessica Biel's character was a little over the top from the very start. She was a little much, but I thought their relationship that kind of slowly developed was pretty good. It was genuine. And then Queen Latifah, I don't know, it was fine. Like, it's sort of like she's kind of Queen Latifah, I mean, not in everything, but in a lot of stuff, she's like pretty typecast, right? Where you're just like, she's going to be like the tough black lady and who's not going to take any shit from anybody and blah, blah, you know, and that's exactly what you got, which is fine, you know, but it's just was nothing unique.
Again, thrown in probably to try to create some laughs and because Queen Latifah could be very funny and probably part of that 24 minutes that could have been cut out of the movie to streamline this story a little bit. I'm going to give a success for this storyline because of, like you said, Jessica Biel and Jamie Foxx coming together, the sports reporter and the publicist. I can see that storyline. I believe two people that hate Valentine's Day finding love on Valentine's Day. That worked for me. As far as the QB thing goes, I didn't see it coming, so I'll give him credit on that. Like he kind of hints like, I don't know what to do with my life, blah, blah, blah. And you're thinking it's all about football. And then you realize, no, it's about this. So I give a success there. All right. Two left, the 14-hour plane ride. This is Julia Roberts, who plays Captain Catherine Heseltine. Bradley Cooper, they're on a plane. They're on a 14-hour plane ride. I'm assuming across the Pacific. And in this one, obviously, you know, nosedives into two other storylines, but
right. I would give it a fail. I would think it was like pretty unneeded in the entire movie. Like it was sort of just like, they're like, I don't know. Bradley Cooper and Julie Roberts said they'd be in the movie. What should we do with them? What if we put him on a plane for 14 hours?
The irony is Bradley Cooper and Julia Roberts were not the first people they asked to do those roles. Jennifer Aniston, Sandra Bullock, and Jodie Foster were all offered the female role. And Bradley Cooper's role was also offered to Sam Worthington, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Orlando Bloom. So it wasn't, let's just get these two handsome actors and actresses and put them on a plane together. It took a lot of work to find those actors.
I give it a fail. I mean, I think they had some like chemistry, but I think that just becomes the fact that they're both good actors. But yeah, I don't know. It didn't do much for me, and I didn't think it really added anything of that much value to the plot.
I gave it a success because they did have chemistry. It was cut very short, and also because you knew it was going to be the one emotional beat of the movie that you kind of saw coming at the end, which is Julia Roberts is flying back to see someone. The kid is missing his mom the whole time. And I picked up very, very early that Julia Roberts was going to be the boy Edison's mom, and that's who she was flying back for. But then they surprised me because I did not see Bradley Cooper being flying back to meet Eric Dane, the quarterback. I didn't see that one coming. So,
right.
Cause they made the other one so obvious that I missed the other little one. So there's just not enough time for anything in this movie. So I gave it a success though. All right. Our last storyline, the kid in love. Edison, the young boy played by Bryce Robinson. What'd you think of that storyline? This is our last storyline we got here.
Absolute fail. just terrible. This is number two of trying to be Love Actually. Like this is literally had to be taken directly from the script almost, except for the fact that I guess his love interest was actually Anne Hathaway and not his classmate in his head, although we don't find that out until the end. But it wasn't very cute, and it wasn't like funny. I don't know. It was a big fail for me.
Yeah, it was a fail for me. There were a few moments of humor because I do enjoy anytime a child acts way too grown up. It always gets me. I always laugh at that. But
yeah, the scene in the flower shop with Ashton Kutcher was funny.
Yeah,
I'll give you that.
But where it goes, yeah, I didn't care for where it went. Didn't do anything for me. You could have had a nice, funny scene where he goes and gives the flowers to the girl, the young girl at the restaurant, but you wasted it.
Yep.
All right, Darren, that is enough. That is a plenty of what we think. Let's take a look at what the Rotten Tomatoes critics thought, how this movie ended up in 18% on Rotten Tomatoes. You want to start fresh or you want to start rotten today? Because there ain't many fresh.
I guess let's start rotten, and then we can end on a good note.
Okay. This is Perry Nemiroff writing for Shakya.com. I know Perry Nemiroff from Collider.com, a YouTube channel, a very good critic. She said, a gigantic mess of cliche romantic dramas that only works because it's brought to life by familiar faces and talented actors. I'm assuming most of the Rotten reviews are basically going to be this, a gigantic mess of cliche romantic dramas thrown together, way too many familiar faces and actors. Do you agree, disagree?
she hit it directly on the head. Like that is a great way to say it, in that you have, yes, there was several good actors and extras in this movie, but you can't just like throw them all at, you're like, it's Valentine's Day, let's make some love stories, and expect it that and not be enough to hold it up.
All right. Yeah. I don't like these ensemble throw everybody in movies. Like I said, there were probably a few storylines in here that could have been perfectly fine rom-com movies on their own that would have told enjoyable stories, but it does get a little messy. You know what? I'm going to bounce back and forth because A.O. Scott has a counter for that. A.O. Scott at the Movies Critic, he says it's a very glib, shallow movie, but it keeps you moving around enough that you could actually have a good time. So do you think the pacing of the movie, this is directed by Gary Marshall, who is a legend who we haven't talked about yet, do you think that the pacing and the editing of the movie at least is enough to keep you interested and invested?
For me, it wasn't. It was too long. I was like, this, why is this dragging on? Like this, what else can we do here? And like you said, like maybe it was because there were so many characters that there was a need that you had to take this long to try to like create a story and end a story with all of them, opposed to if you had just, you know, four or five characters, then you could shorten it. And it could, like you said, it could be a 90-minute movie. It could be a 100-minute movie instead of a 125-minute movie.
I will say that jumping around between the different storylines, at least it did keep me engaged enough. Like I said, I probably would have walked out of this on Valentine's Day going, hey, we had a nice date night. We had a couple laughs. So I think the editing and the pacing of the movie moved fast enough that I didn't feel the full weight of the 124 minutes. But I did notice there were a couple scenes where I'm like, why is this in here? All right, going back to the Rotten reviews, Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian says, a brutal St. Valentine's Day massacre of comedy, of love, of believable human emotion. Of course, we have to have a punny, we can't do the No Meth Movies podcast without a punny review from one of our Rotten Tomatoes reviewers. Was it a massacre of comedy, love, and believable human emotion, Darren?
I mean, maybe that's a bit much. Maybe that's a little far to take it, but it was a gentle killing, perhaps, not a massacre, you know.
Did you laugh? Come on. Did you laugh?
Oh yeah, there were definitely parts that I laughed at for sure.
All right. I laughed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forget you, Peter Bradshaw. No sense of humor. All right. Let's see. Let's find another fresh review here. Okay, Giles Hartle from the Sydney Morning Herald. He says, Valentine's Day, the film, is exactly what you think it is. You can't complain if you see it because you were warned by the title, by the trailer, and by the genre. So, compared to all the other sappy rom-coms out there that you could probably go see every Valentine's Day in your theater, was this really any worse? Like, did you kind of know what you were getting into? Like, come on.
I mean, I was not expecting to fall in love with this movie when I watched it, but there's a lot of better rom-coms out there than this one, in my opinion.
Okay, so just the setting expectations it didn't even live up to the expectations that it set.
Yeah, I mean, it did, but my expectations were very low.
All right, Darren, that does it for the Rotten Tomatoes critics. I think you can guess that pretty much every one of these is going to be the same. All right, Darren, technically there is kind of a sequel to this movie because Gary Marshall pulls out these tricks. By the way, Gary Marshall is a legend. Let's get this in here because he's the creator of Happy Days and the spinoffs, Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley. He created The Odd Couple for television. He directed Pretty Woman, Runaway Bride, Princess Diaries. Like, guy's kind of a legend in the Hollywood space. But he did kind of have a sequel where he basically took the same formula, completely different actors, and did the movie New Year's Eve, and then did the movie Mother's Day. So the formula was repeated, if you can consider that a sequel. But Darren, if we were to pitch sequels, this is the part of the podcast where we improv something. If we were to pitch sequels, what would you do for Valentine's Day?
My sequel would be that it would be Valentine's Day like 5 years later, right?
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's still Valentine's Day. And what this movie didn't do, where other sort of ensemble movies do, is that it didn't in the end somehow string most of the stories together. Like it did a little bit where like some people knew other people, but it didn't bring all of them together. Like as somehow they knew each other to some capacity. So what if it's Valentine's Day 5 years later and all of these people sort of somehow end up meeting each other or together? And then there's all this drama because they are one, somebody's liking each other more than they're having second thoughts, becomes a whole thing. And so you sort of have an ensemble cast, but sort of can love endure kind of movie when it's met with these challenges.
I feel like this has to be set around one of these characters getting married.
Like, sure.
It has to be centered around a wedding.
Okay. That's a great place to come together.
All right. Darren is doubling down on the sappy romance. All right. I'm going to steal a page out of Gary Marshall's playbook here. And the logical sequel to this.
Easter.
Christmas Day. Oh. Christmas Day is the...
This has already been written.
If there's two holidays that challenge a relationship more, it's Valentine's Day and it's Christmas. You're meeting the families, right? You're coming together. There's all the pressure of maybe you're hosting, cooking the meal. You got to get the perfect gift. Just all the pressures that come with Valentine's Day are like magnified tenfold when it comes to Christmas. So, I think that's but you got to keep the same actors. Like we have to see where all these people end up, you know, what would that be like 10 months from now when it comes around to Christmas?
Yeah. You know, that's true. They have not made yet Christmas rom-coms. So we should get another one.
Okay. My other idea was like a disaster type movie where like there's an earthquake and LA's falling into the ocean and all these people, it's the same actors. And now they have to survive a disaster movie. That was my other pitch.
I like the second one way better.
All right, Darren, it is time for quick picks. Oh, it has been so long since we've done this. It's time to pick out the things we liked about the movie, the nitpicks we have about the movie, all those last little details we throw in the quick picks section. Darren, what do you got for me in quick picks?
My first one is simply that Valentine's Day is whose favorite holiday is Valentine's Day? I don't know a single person.
True romantics, Darren. True romantics.
Yeah, right. I don't know a single person that is like, oh my God, I can't believe it's Valentine's Day tomorrow. I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, okay. Great. It's Valentine's Day. Maybe I'll get a card for my wife. I don't know. But fortunately, she feels the same way. So it's sort of like,
there you go. You guys are like Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right. My first quick pick was, is Romeo Midnight, the LA radio DJ that is the, I don't know, framing device for the movie. Is he broadcasting all day and all night? Is he doing a 24-hour love marathon on the radio? That would be exhausting.
He must love Valentine's Day that
no
much.
No radio station would let a DJ go 24 hours like that. That's insane.
It's a lot. And I don't know who would listen for that long. I don't even know. It's just like endless love ballads. I don't know what you would play.
Or maybe he recorded like a 4-hour show and then they just looped it all day.
That would be better. Yeah. That'd be better.
What else you got?
My next one was, dang, that they're like, I think he was supposed to be like the quirky gay guy who works at the floral shop. Maybe he's not, he spends very little time in the movie, but he's around for a hot second. But he tells the woman from Bolivia that she has to learn to speak English because she's in America. And I was like, God damn, that is not okay.
Yeah, there's some cultural problems with this movie. This is a white ass movie.
Yep.
Like, we're two white podcasters, but this is a white ass movie.
That's why they had to. That's why he's like, man, we got to get Queen Latifah in here to try to.
Jamie Foxx is the only person of color that has a love story that's in any storylines.
Yep.
And they made him a sports, like the sports reporter. Really? You have one. Yeah. This movie has a little bit of a problem with that. All right. Jessica Alba didn't say yes. The very beginning of the movie, Ashton Kutcher proposes. She says, wow. He puts the ring on her finger and then runs out of the apartment going, she said yes. She never says yes. Like, if you're proposing, guys or ladies, because hey, it's 2021. Yeah, anyone can propose. If you get down on that knee, by the way, men or ladies, if you're proposing, get down on that knee. That's the right way to do it. You got to hear the yes. Make sure you get the yes. And do you want anyone proposing to you before you brush your teeth?
That's a good point.
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't want that. All right. What else you got?
I'm sure you'll know the name of the actress, but I don't. It was Emma Roberts' schoolmate.
Okay.
The girl who's like caramel colored skin, Emma Roberts was telling her, this girl was asking Emma Roberts if she could like do something after school or be part of some.
That was a teacher. That was Kristen Schaal.
Oh, is it a T? Okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Kristen okay. Schaal, the comedian. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew that I recognized her. I didn't know her name. Maybe one of the funniest lines in the movie, I thought, where she, because Emma Roberts is talking about how she's not going to be able to do it today on lunch because she's going to be having sex with her boyfriend for the first time. And Kristen Schaal goes, she's like, oh, but I could do it tomorrow. She's like, oh, you'll be done having sex by then? Question mark.
I gotcha.
That got me. That was real funny.
I think the funniest line, and my wife laughed out loud at this one, was when Topher Grace and Anne Hathaway are in the restaurant. And he's like, oh, I was just joking. And the waiter's like, I'll come back when you're serious. And walks away.
Yeah, that was...
That made her laugh.
That was mean, man.
Hey, LA restaurants, man. Apparently it's tough going on Valentine's Day. Would you let a stewardess put a blanket on you and your wife, or you and a stranger who was sleeping on your shoulder? Would you feel comfortable with a stewardess just coming over you and snuggling you in a blanket?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I would. I think I would. Especially if it was noticeably cold on the plane.
I would be okay if she handed me the blanket, but don't be snuggling people in. It's a little too much.
My next one was, so how old do you think the kid is?
10?
I was thinking that. I was like 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. Are you learning about protons and neutrons yet?
I think she said 5th grade.
Are you learning about protons and neutrons yet? It's a literal question. I don't remember at all. I have no idea.
Kids today are amazing, man. They got STEM education out there. They're probably learning about those things at like 6 years old.
It was just like, it seemed like she was telling this very like kind of dopey, although maybe supposedly realistic or historically accurate story about how Valentine's Day came. And it was like, oh yeah, this is right for kids. And then the next scene, she's talking about protons and neutrons and how, and I was like, whoa, did we just enter like a whole new class? Like, what happened?
I will tell you, I looked it up on the History Channel's website, and because that's the first link that came up, that story was pretty accurate to what they believe is the legend of St. Valentine's Day.
Good, good.
Did you notice that the QB, Eric Dane, did you notice that he had bongo drums on his balcony?
I did not.
Who keeps bongo drums on their balcony?
Well, it never rains in LA, right?
How much would your neighbors hate you if you were playing bongo drums on your big ones, big conga drums, big, and that stand up on their own on a public beach, overlooking a public beach? And he's just up there wailing on his bongo drums?
Maybe they were just for show. Maybe it was just a decor thing.
All right. What do you got?
Next one. And maybe I just misheard it because I didn't go back and listen to it because I thought of it later on. But didn't Bradley Cooper on the plane say that he just had gotten out of a relationship? Or was he just like lying?
I guess he was lying because he was
in a relationship,
but was heartbroken that his boyfriend wouldn't be open about it.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It was just confusing because I didn't. Yeah. I don't know.
I guess it was all in service of that twist at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jessica Alba. Did she keep his dog or was that her dog?
It's not clear.
She kept the dog.
Oh, she kept the dog for sure. But like, it wasn't clear whose dog it was because they both had a relationship, a strong bond with this dog.
That's cold blooded. Like,
I mean, maybe it was her dog. I don't know.
If you leave, you can't take the dog. You have to leave the dog.
I see.
You're the one doing the breaking up.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
All right, well, we got a lot of these this week.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I thought was a continuity error, and maybe I just missed it or wasn't paying close enough attention. But I thought Anne Hathaway, excuse me, too many people in this movie. I thought it was Jennifer Garner. Damn it. I thought Jennifer Garner did fly to San Francisco. We see her go into the gate, into the whatever the hell the thing is called between the physical airport and the plane, and go to San Francisco. But then all of a sudden we don't see her come back. And she gets on a phone call with her girlfriend saying, "Oh no, I'm still in LA."
Yes, that was a problem. Yes, she goes to the LA hospital to look for him, even though she knows he's supposed to be at the San Francisco hospital.
And she got on a plane, as far as we knew, to go to San Francisco because yes. she had it out with Ashton Kutcher in the airport.
Yeah,
I was very confused.
Didn't make sense.
Okay, good. I'm not crazy.
All right, I could go all day on this movie here. There's so many little things. My last nitpick, where did the second camera guy come from the news crew?
Of course, that would be a nitpick.
The cameraman is like, all right, my time to shine. And then next thing you know, first off, very creepy that he goes back to his old high school romance stories. And then there's another camera guy there. Was that like guy just sitting in the van waiting for his moment to be a camera guy?
Yeah, I think he was. I think maybe that's just how they do to that news station. There's always... An understudy is waiting at all times.
All right. I could go all day on this movie. That's the last one I got for you. What, you got anything else?
Yeah, no, that was the last one I had too.
All right, Darren, before we make our decisions on whether or not it's a good movie or a bad movie, you want to hear some trivia?
Yeah.
We've already gone through a ton of the trivia, all the casting things and stuff like that. Apparently Julia Roberts got paid a ton of money to be in this movie. She got $3 million up front and then got like 10% on the gross of the movie or something like that. Like it turned out to be $10 million.
Damn.
And she said 251 words in the movie.
I was going to say, she's a very small part of this movie.
Obviously, there are a lot of references to Pretty Woman, which is another Gary Marshall movie. And a lot of the actors and actresses that pop into this movie are frequent flyers in Gary Marshall movies. Including a lot of his family members have cameos. He has a cameo. He's one of the band members that Topher Grace was going to use to surprise Anne Hathaway at the end of the movie. And then she's like, I like it simple. And he waves him away. Gary Marshall was one of them.
Nice.
Yeah. Most of these things are just references to Gary Marshall movies or references to actors and actresses that he's worked with. I will say that in the airport, when they're at the baggage claim, the other chauffeur drivers are holding signs with the last name Unger and the last name Madison, which are the two characters from The Odd Couple, which Gary Marshall created for TV.
Oh, look at that.
So there you go. There's your trivia. We actually peppered a lot of trivia in as we went. So Darren, it's time. Our first decision of 2021, the movie Valentine's Day. Was it a good movie or was it a bad movie? And I'm guessing everybody knows what you're about to say.
This is the best movie I've ever seen.
Twist.
No, I put this down as a bad movie. It was way too long. And so I found myself really wondering on several occasions, like when it was going to be over. And it really felt like a wannabe Love Actually. And don't get me wrong, Love Actually has its own issues. If you know, I don't think we're going to do that movie because I'm pretty sure it's probably above our, it's not a meh movie, I'm pretty sure. But, and it is way better than this movie. And it's, you know, maybe it's less of an ensemble, maybe more of an ensemble if you're more familiar with the British actors. But yeah, it just really felt like it was trying to be Valentine's Day Love Actually. And it was not as funny, and it was not as heartfelt, and it was not as endearing. And so despite the fact that it had some funny parts to it, parts that I definitely laughed at and some lines here and there, it missed the mark as far as good rom-com, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Darren, we are going to start 2021 off by agreeing. I think this is a bad movie. However, I will say if your significant other wants to watch it on Valentine's Day, there are worse things you could pick. There is enough redeeming qualities that if you sat down and watched it with a couple of glasses of wine and a slice of chocolate cake, like, you're going to get through it. So it could have been a lot worse. Like I said, there's probably a better 100-minute movie in here. And I got 3 successes out of the 7 romantic storylines. So, you know, so 4 fails, 3 successes. That means I guess I'm going to have to go bad movie overall. So unfortunately, that's how we're starting 2021. Valentine's Day is officially, according to the No Meth Movies podcast, a bad movie. Coming up, now because we dropped this episode special on Valentine's Day, coming up later this week, from now on, all the episodes are going to drop on Wednesdays, because we always like to lead into whatever movie was going to come out that weekend, the big release that weekend, if that's how we're theming the episodes. So that's why we like to come out on Wednesdays. But it's going to be weird this year because there are not a lot of movies coming out in theaters because we're still in a pandemic. But there's things being released on streaming. There are some theatrical releases that they're going to try, plus streaming. There's also plenty of movies celebrating anniversaries, people celebrating birthdays. So we've got plenty of movies to get through. And coming up next week, we're going to start with an anniversary movie, a movie celebrating its 20-year anniversary. We're going with Tom Cruise in Vanilla Sky, which scores a 42% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.9 on IMDb. It is free for streaming right now on Amazon Prime or Crackle or Pluto TV. So if you have any of those things, you can watch this movie for free right now with us. And then you can join us on Wednesday for the next episode of the podcast. So that's everything for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you are listening on. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor. Give the podcast 5 stars. Give us a review on there. If you feel it's worthy of 5 stars, help spread the word. There's tons of movie review podcasts, and we think ours is pretty unique and pretty fun. So if you enjoy it, if you enjoy our conversations, help spread the word by give a rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter at NoMemMovies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Darren, it's been a year. Are you on Twitter yet?
No, I'm not, sir.
Still not on Twitter. Thanks for supporting the show. And the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there are no meh movies.